Hello and welcome to a special edition of the No Ripcord podcast. This month we're going to leave aside the usual running order and we're going to focus our attention on our top 100 debut albums list. Hopefully you've had a chance to check this out on the website. If not, now's a good time to do so because you probably won't understand much of what we're talking about if you don't. It's published over five parts and we're going to dive in and discuss all aspects of the list today. I've got with me in the virtual studio, I've got Matt Montgomery.
Hello.
Joe Rivers, features editor.
Hello.
And Juan Rodriguez, managing editor.
Hello, everyone.
And I am, of course, David Coleman. Okay, let's dive into the discussion then. We're going to kick off right at the top, no messing around here, and we're going to discuss the top 10 to begin with. Juan, if we can start with you, what are your thoughts on the top 10?
Okay, on the spot here. So, I did pretty much choose our number one album, which is a topic that we can go ahead and discuss, which is The Velvet Underground and Nico. I'm pretty sure that not everyone is completely surprised over this choice. It seems to be the quote-unquote indie album of excellence in a way, because it tends to definitely cater to that sort of audience. But I think that it's that sort of album where even rock historians have also embraced it. So you sort of have that, you have that appreciation not only for maybe that sort of niche public, but also it's very well regarded not only in our list but on a lot of numerous lists that you're going to see around the internet as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a regular fixture on any list, isn't it? Best albums of the 60s, greatest albums of all time. You're going to see that. And I think when we sat down and said we were going to discuss debut albums, as unpredictable a topic as it is, I think all of us would have reckoned on seeing the Velvet Underground definitely in the top 10.
Yeah,
most likely the top 5, and probably if we had to put our money on it, in first place as well.
Yeah, no surprise there.
And part of the reason, I guess, is that Velvet Underground kickstarted, maybe unconsciously, but it kickstarted a lot of genres that are still very well regarded until this day. Like starting, you know, in, I guess you can see Velvet Underground's influence planted on numerous genres, whether it's punk music, whether it's even neo-folk. So you have a lot of to digest there in just one package, and it's not necessarily the most cohesive album either, but it's certainly one of the most inventive considering it was done in 1967, which albums by that time weren't regarded that much as albums in a sense. And so I think that in a way it also epitomizes what the concept of the album means, because we did have Beatles albums, and that's also the blooming, you would say, of a lot of artists starting to embrace this idea of what the album meant. Like we would see like the Beatles doing it. The Kinks also did a few great concept albums by that era. But it seems to me that it was also the one of those precursors to the importance of the album, and I think that it well represents what this list overall as well.
Yeah, and I think that ties in with why the list itself starts. You know, the earliest record on the list is from 1957, I think, 56, 57, and it is very much the sort of dawn of the album era, isn't it? The mid-60s onwards.
Yeah.
Oh, which is why there was no cutoff really for the list. People could have gone back as far as they wanted, but the bulk of the choices were 60s onwards.
Yeah. Well, I'll go on, Joe.
Sure. I was going to say, I think this one touched on something interesting there about how it, with it being the kind of album that gave birth, or was one of the albums that gave birth to the concept of albums, just not wishing to sort of throw a spanner in the works, but do you think sometimes the myth and the influence gets reviewed with the Velvet Underground rather than the album itself?
Oh, definitely. I can see that being sort of even a misnomer in a sense, but not only in terms of its influence, but I just think that in itself, it's a really damn well-constructed album in its own terms. What would you think of the album in itself? Because what do you guys think about the songs in themselves? Because I think that they're all really great songs, and it's still one of those albums that still, 30 years on, 40 now, they still sound really good and really fresh to me. And sort of like a statement that I also wrote in my blurb is that it also, maybe it may be a bold statement, but it also spawned like a new era of what the creation of what a modern critic is as well. Because in that, we still had that flower power movement, and that came after the Monterey Festival, and it was a very different way of looking at music, and the Velvet Underground sort of were the nihilistic side of that, and that's also really interesting to me. And cry behind the
door. Moving on to the rest of the top 10, we've discussed the Velvet Underground. Is there anything else there that people are surprised to see in the top 10? Should we start with Joe?
Oh, sorry. I'll jump in there. So I'm not surprised to see it in the top 10 so much, but I'm surprised to see Funeral by the Arcade Fire at number 2.
Yeah.
That above, Joy Division, Pavement, Jimi Hendrix, The Ramones. It's, it was fairly high in my individual list, but I'm surprised that a group of people who all listen to a lot of music can sort of get together and put an album that's, well, only 6 years old, so its influence can't really be felt to such the extent that, say, the Velvet Underground can, obviously. And didn't really sell a lot of copies as well. I mean, I know, the Velvet Underground is hardly multi-platinum, but still very surprised to see it in there.
Yeah, I think I've been compiling end of year lists for the site for some time now, and Arcade Fire are always traditionally a band that have done very, very well. I think Funeral was our number one album of the year when it came out, even though it hadn't actually been released in the UK at the time, which was a phenomenal achievement. And the other albums have also fared very well. And I think it's probably because it's perhaps one of the definitive debuts of this last decade, and because of the age of the writers contributing to the list, it's a debut that we've seen grow and actually felt around the time of its release. I think that's probably the key difference between that and anything else in the list, really, to our writing staff who are, largely in their 20s and 30s. I think that's why it's there. It wouldn't be that high up on my list either, but the vast majority of people did vote for it.
Yeah, it made it into my top 10 certainly, but I'm like we've said, it's a little surprising that it hit number 2, but I guess when everybody has it reasonably high in their list, maybe for nobody it was the top 3 or top 4 or top 5 even. But I guess when it's all combined, it has that impact. And that's got to say something about the way we've listened to it.
it's quite interesting because just to divulge a little bit of the behind the scenes information, six people had Velvet Underground as number one on their list, whereas only two people had Funeral at the top of their list. So that perhaps tells the story. And one of us didn't have Funeral on their list at all, and that's Juan. What did you think about its placing?
I am in Joe's camp here. I definitely think it's way high up on the list. But I think here is maybe where we see a generational gap of how we listen to music, because I can certainly understand why Arcade Fire is so influential for our day and age, and having lived it as well. I really have no qualms over it either. I really like Funeral, but I also feel like I've enjoyed their subsequent albums more, Neon Bible and The Suburbs. So I guess it's the type of album that I just don't really place it that high. I thought in my perspective it was a great album of that specific year, but it's not something that I would regard it with other artists. I feel that it doesn't have that many elements to me that really distinguishes from being something incredible instead of just being great, in my perspective. But you guys can definitely chime in more there.
I like the record. Actually, it's my favorite Arcade Fire album. I was going to say puts me in the minority, but Joe backed me up. Thanks.
I'll back you up too.
Wow. Okay. So you heard it here first. The best Arcade Fire album. But I haven't actually followed their progress as closely. To me, it was, and I expect will remain their greatest achievement. And I think it did have that, you know, that concept underlying it, and I think the fact that it came out of nowhere, and the band were putting on great live shows, and I think it perhaps came at a time where it was a pretty lean spell as well for that kind of, you know, stadium thinking band, you know, because they were always going to be a bigger thing. They weren't going to be a small indie concert.
Yeah, I guess this writer here will, to his own chagrin, still prefer listening to something like U2, perhaps, even if I'm the minority here. But I'm just kidding. I like the fact that also the enjoyment for Arcade Fire for many of our writers, it's not really a sense of really trying to describe why it's so great, or it's just an album that seems to be very joyful for a lot of listeners. And I think here it's not really looking into, oh, it's for historical merits and so forth. It's just an album that is really joyful, and people tend to really sit back and listen to it again and again and again. And I think really that really defines what a great album should be, instead of looking for any historical context and so forth. So I guess I can see why the Arcade Fire is so high up the list as well.
Yeah. Just think, it could have done even better if you'd voted for it, Juan. But there you go. What about the rest of the top 10 then? Is there anything else there that anyone takes exception to, or anything anyone's particularly surprised to see?
I was going to point out about the top 10, the majority of the writers on the site are men, but it's a very testosterone heavy list. I had a look, and the highest up female is Patti Smith at 15. And I then checked my own list to make sure I put a female higher than 15 so I could complain about this, and I have, so that's fine.
Yeah, but there's those guys who were talking about feminism in indie music last month.
Yeah.
And now look at this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's very classic as well, to my mind as well. You know, Hendrix, Television, Ramones, Led Zeppelin, The Clash, Joy Division, Velvet Underground. These are classic. I mean, you imagine a staff with an average age of 40, even 50, you know, senior rock critics coming up with something fairly similar.
Yeah.
With the exception of the Velvet Underground, which you say has got six people, it's at the top of six people's lists, I'd imagine because these are the classics, they're the ones people would have been more likely to hear, so they're just going to feature on more lists, so just the sheer force of numbers, perhaps.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and I think we were mindful of that before we even started the process, that some things will fare better just by virtue of being heard more, but... there is no way around it. They've been heard more for a reason as well. So, come on, skinny love, just let's sing it. Pour a little salt, we will never eat. My. Okay, moving on. I often think that the outside the top 10, there's plenty of things to discuss in these lists. It's often where some of the more unpredictable selections appear, and also we can discuss our favorite albums that didn't make the grade as well. Should we start there? Anything that anyone would have bet their house on appearing on this list that somehow missed out? Should we start with Matt?
Things that I thought would definitely make an appearance. I mean, especially ones I included on my own list. I guess the big one for me would be the first Elliott Smith album. I was surprised to not see it make the top 100 there. As far as things like residing outside of the top 10 that I thought maybe should have been, I could nitpick a little bit. Like I would change a couple into top 10 and move them down to the second set of 10. But really for me, it's... it does get really interesting down there, but at the same time, that top 10 is almost impenetrable.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, Elliott Smith, it's an interesting point because that was one album that really just missed out. I think it placed around 121 on the overall list.
Oh wow!
So it was close. You know, a couple more votes, and it would have definitely been on that. I guess Elliott Smith, probably an artist who's more known for his, you know, mid to late career, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's certainly a very good album. Juan, anything that you were surprised to see miss out?
Oh, definitely the glaring omission of the Pretenders. I mean, Dave, according to you, not many people even chose the Pretenders at all, and I don't know, I guess maybe I regard that album much more than I would have thought, but yeah, that was a pretty glaring omission, at least in my perspective of what I think of the album itself.
The Pretenders was 153 on the list, so it certainly fell short. Sandwiched in between the Dead Kennedys and James Brown, so in pretty good company, but ultimately not.
Yeah, that's not the best place to be, I don't think.
You know, I love my stats, so yeah. So the Pretenders, I could tell that you were rather upset at that omission. Anything on the list, Juan, that you would happily remove in order to restore the Pretenders to their rightful place?
Bon Iver.
Oh wow! So,
yeah, two votes for that, please.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's too late. It has been published. But you'd lose the Bon Iver album altogether.
Oh yeah, I think that album is incredibly lethargic and boring, and not as interesting as many people regard it to be. I really enjoyed his last album, but the first one.
I agreed with everything Juan said until that I really enjoyed the last album bit.
Yeah, I know your thoughts on Bon Iver, Joe.
Yeah. I'd remove the album from history rather than just the list.
Right, so you wouldn't leave it at the list. You'd literally erase every single copy.
Yeah, okay. I'm still bitter about that £8 that I'm never getting back, having bought that album.
I think it's time to let that go. anything else on there you'd like to ask, Joe?
Don't feel
you need to limit yourself to one choice, but by all means.
Oh right, I've got free rein, have I? Fantastic.
Yeah.
I was quite surprised to see Jose Gonzalez so far up there, and we were sort of talking a bit about this before we started recording, and I think Matt sort of said it just seems like a very sort of standard folk album, and there are much better examples of the genre, and what that's doing there is I would say anybody's guess, but I'm sure they've got some fantastic statistics to back up why it should be there. But
I've got statistics to back up why it is there, but I haven't got statistics to back up why it should be there. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Because I also agree. It's not really an album that made a great dent on me, but there was quite a bit of love for it. You know, it certainly got into one writer's top 10. It was in, certainly in a few top 20s as well.
You said it didn't make a dent on you. I don't remember it making a dent on anyone particularly at the time. I mean, in the UK at least, it sold quite well off the back of an ad. Heartbeat's been used in an advert, and that's a lovely version of Heartbeat. But that's, I don't know.
One of the beauties of the site that maybe it'll make some of us take a step back and think maybe we need to listen to that album, because I can't confess that I've actually listened to the whole thing. And Joe, just to follow up, was there anything that missed out from the list that you would have liked to see, apart from obviously Suede being number one?
Yeah, that was I can't say that was a shock, but it was to be expected, unfortunately. But some people are just wrong sometimes, aren't they?
Indeed.
The highest one up from my list that didn't make the top 100, and also one that, not just because I rated that highly, but just one that I expected to, was the first Yeah Yeah Yeahs album. I mean, the Strokes album, the first Strokes album was on there, the first White Strokes album was on there, and that's from a relatively similar time period, and although subsequent Yeah Yeah Yeahs albums haven't quite hit the heights, I absolutely adore that album. I think it's fantastic, and quite surprised not to see it higher, really.
It is a great album, and it didn't make my list, and it didn't really make many people's lists. It finished, actually, stat coming up, at 156 on the list. So not a great amount of love.
Yeah, I placed it at number 4, so that might have been enough by itself, I'd imagine, to get to 156.
Yeah, I mean, there were only 2 votes for it, which is astounding, really. It was bumped up by your number 4, but I think it's a great album. I think perhaps one that perhaps we've just forgotten about. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? A bit of a mystery, that, because, you know, I think now you've raised that subject, probably a lot of us will be thinking, yeah, why didn't we vote for that?
Ask yourself that, yeah. We all should have done.
And was there something else as well? Were you going to say that was the highest one on your list that didn't make it? And was there something else that you thought should have made it as well?
I'd have quite liked to have seen the Go Team album on there, just because when it came along, it was very sort of fresh and different sounding. That'd be, I mean, there are other albums I've got rated higher up that aren't on there, but to be honest, I think they might be, I'm there. Flags that I fly alone in a lonely place, so I'm not particularly surprised. So, but that one I thought may have got a little love. That and Box Space Alpha by Saint Etienne would have been nice, but hey, can't have everything.
Yeah, indeed. And when we publish Joe Rufus's top 100 debut albums of all time next summer, they might get lucky.
I'd imagine so.
Probably the album that I'm disappointed from my own list not to see on there is the Exploding Hearts Guitar Romantic album, which is one of my favorite albums of the last decade, a really, really fun, vibrant debut. Obviously that band's only record before they tragically lost three of their members in a bus crash. But I urge anyone who hasn't heard it to dig that one out and give it a listen. It's just really, 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 really good fun, power pop, great melodies, great harmonies, fantastic. It didn't get any other votes apart from my own top 10 placing, and I can't even find it. Let's see, 248 on the list.
In with a bullet at 248.
Yeah, you know, widely acclaimed, clearly, but that was my top rated album that didn't make it. The album that I expected to make it that didn't, and only missed out by a whisker, was Nowhere by Ride, which, you know, picked up quite a few votes from the shoegaze crowd. Did you vote for it, Matt?
I'm not sure I did, actually. And
you should have.
Yeah, looking back at my list now, there are things that I see on the top 100 that I would have put in my list. I just, you know, didn't enter into my mind for whatever reason.
Yeah, you single-handedly brought about the downfall of Ride. Yeah. There you go. Shame on you.
I should write them and apologize.
You should.
Resident shoegaze expert, and he doesn't choose Ride in his list.
Yeah. That's a shame. But, you know, these things happen, I guess. I can live with that.
The interesting thing about these lists is that they're obviously never perfect, and you're always going to see, like, these weird mishmashes of old and new. Like, for example, like something like The Decemberists is really interesting to see as the purveyor of Baroque pop, because I think it's one of the few ones on the list, and it's way down there on the like 90-something, but it's really interesting because bands like precursors of bands like, for example, 60s British folk or stuff like, for example, I chose The Left Banc really high on my list, like, not to sound like a mopey, old-timey critic or anything like that, but The Left Banc has really influenced a lot of bands like The Decemberists and as well, and not only that, but even bands that I really cherish, like modern pop bands like XTC or even Roxy Music or even Field Music as well. I really think that it does a disservice, but it's also really interesting to see like The Decemberists, which is an album that I really like. I think I even included it, perhaps. Don't even remember, but even. It's interesting that we chose The Decemberists over stuff like maybe The Zombies or stuff from the 60s psychedelia, which are more well-known, not necessarily something like The Left Banc. But, you know, that I found it really interesting, like, the final tally as well.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to point out that Juan said, I don't want to sound like a mopey old critic. And then in the next breath said, modern pop music like Roxy Music, which doesn't really... you're not doing yourself any favours there, really.
That's very well observed. I didn't quite get the chance to complain about the things that are on the list that I would like to remove. And when you're sat there with a huge spreadsheet in front of you that no one's really ever going to check, the temptation there just to draw a big fat line through something like Coldplay's Parachutes.
Is that Coldplay's Parachutes given 10 out of 10 by popular music?
I think you'll do well to find that review on the internet. It's been erased and completely eradicated from memory. Really,
stand by your, you know, you should stand by your views.
Yes, if I could take that 18-year-old me down a dark alley and give me a stern kicking for giving that 10 out of 10, I probably would.
Unfortunately, you'd also break the space time continuum if you did that, and that's why
I would. And probably no record would cease to exist, wouldn't it? Because I'd be I'd probably be too disheartened to continue. But it's a good album. It's a good album. It's not a great album. It's a good album, and it didn't deserve to be on this list, to my mind. And interestingly, when I was sitting down to compile it, I was kind of groaning that the Mars Volta had appeared on there as well. And I know Juan will back me up on that. But in an amazing turn of events, I actually listened to the album, and I find that I actually really like it now, even though I didn't like it at all when it came out.
It's a fun record. I like it.
Yeah, it's a good fun. It's completely over the top. It's ridiculously pretentious, but it's good fun. And I think the sheer audacity of the lyrics probably put me off. It was about 23 or whatever I was when it came out. I don't even remember. I was happy to look past that and really enjoyed it, actually. So give it another try, Juan. You might like it.
Well, I have a confession. I used to listen to that album a lot way back when I was 16, or when did that album came out? Wow.
2003.
2003? Yeah, well, I listened to that a lot way back, but I don't know, after really trying to dig those lyrics and trying to see what a Telerik spider or whatever it is they're talking about, it's really grown on me, like, on the opposite spectrum of things. Maybe there's a few songs here and there that I like, but it's sort of also, it's a testament also to how the Mars Volta has with time, like, diminished, because I think every album got exponentially worse after that. probably a lot of people will disagree with me there, but
yeah, they probably won't be listening to this podcast, though, because we haven't been the greatest supporters of the Mars Volta over the last five years.
Where are they now?
Where are they indeed? That, you know.
Well, right now, I think Omar Rodriguez is doing his own solo stuff. Cedric is also doing his own solo work here and there, and sometimes playing with the Mars Volta too. So they're still around, definitely kicking and doing their own jazzy prog records now. But now they're much more cerebral albums instead of doing something that sounds... And I think the reason many people like it is just, like David said, the sheer excitement of listening to something that sort of fused this jazzy, even Santana-like sound to a new era as well. And I can definitely see that too.
It's preposterous music for strange people, but that first album is very good, I think.
Yeah, but leave it there. You don't go any further. You don't buy up the back catalogue. You just you dabble, don't you, with the band?
I own Francis the Mute, the second album, and any album that has a half hour track called Miranda, that ghost just isn't holy anymore. It's got to be admired.
I have it too, actually. So if I am going to talk down on the Mars Volta, at least I have the justification of having their record. So,
yeah, good. You know, like me with Coldplay.
Before we run away talking about the Mars Volta for the rest of the podcast, I like the juxtaposition at the very bottom of the list. So anybody sort of coming to this thinking that's great, I'll start at the bottom of the list. The first thing they'll see is new artists such as the Postal Service and James Blake ranking above Elvis Presley, which is quite a sort of controversial opener, really.
Yeah, it sets a tone, doesn't it?
It's certainly an interesting one. I mean, as you say, the Elvis one is the earliest on the list, I'm assuming. Oh, Buddy Holly is on there as well.
And Johnny Cash as well. They're the 350s representative.
As you say, it does sort of hark back to a time almost before and the album existed in the form as we know it now. And
The Elvis record, it isn't something Elvis went into the studio and said, I'm going to make an album and this is going to be the theme and this is going to be the running order. It's a collection of recordings from around the same time, but it's more of a sort of cobbled together job than than the Postal Service album. So, you know, not an album in the sense of how we recognize albums today, perhaps. But Buddy Holly's fairly high up the list.
He's where he would have wanted to be, between the Notorious B.I.G. and the Beastie Boys.
In very appropriate company. And the beauty is, as well, if you listen to the playlist, you get that juxtaposition in a very real sense. And I think listening to that in order is it's a real trip. It really is, and one worth taking. You know my love. I think that's about all we've got to discuss. I think, you know, by all means, you know, get involved yourself, read the list, have a look at the discussion threads, listen to the playlists, and get involved and have a debate. It took a lot of time to put together. None of us agree with it, so you are completely welcome to disagree. But I think that's the thing with these things. Don't take them too seriously and just use them as a platform to check out some really great music and to argue about it with people that you're never going to meet. Okay? So
we'll definitely be there to answer to a lot of people's questions or rants, because we'll rant as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing you get with No Rope Code. We will argue with you to the death, really.
Constructively.
Constructively, and obviously. Okay, just for people, for non-regular listeners, this is a monthly event, the No Rope Code podcast. We usually discuss a few different topics, but this has been a special edition. So do subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can listen to us musing on the current hot topics in the musical world every month, straight to your iPod or other compatible device. So thanks, guys, for participating. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. Can I just point out for any potential new listeners also our Twitter and Facebook pages? We are twitter.com/noripcord and facebook.com/noripcordmagazine, I believe.
Yeah, and I'd also like to add that in the month of December, I am also going to, instead of doing tracks, random tracks that I've been listening to, starting December 1st, I'm going to do a track per day of my favorite songs of 2011. So we can sort of recap once we have the top 50 albums as well, which also comes out every year. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to.
That's great. That sounds like something to get us into the festive mood. A good countdown. And of course, we've got our end of year list coming up on the site later on in the month as well, just in case one enormous list wasn't enough for you. Okay. Thanks for listening.